WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Welcome to the broadcast on this Sunday, June 21st, 2026. I am Rob Jerisline. Happy Father's Day to all of my fellow dads out there. I don't know about you, but I feel like the luckiest guy in the world with the great kids that I've got. And as I get older, I seem to appreciate Father's Day a little bit more. I've got a little more time, maybe. I'm not chasing little kids around anymore, and I appreciate what I've accomplished as a father and what my kids are accomplishing, and that's pretty gratifying. A couple of good guests here today. Corey Fisher from Trout Unlimited is going to join us. That organization is working really hard on the federal roadless rule, which is brewing in Washington, D.C., not only with the Trump administration, but also with the U.S. Congress. I believe I mentioned that a little bit last week. We're going to really dive into it with Corey here in a few minutes. Then John Dunn from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources will join us. We're going to talk about some new special regulations that the DNR has proposed for about a dozen fishing lakes around the state. So we will get into that a little bit later. Dedicated listeners know I usually bring up some news topics during this first segment. There's a couple items to get to today. First off, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources this past week announced that the application period is now open if you want to apply to hunt elk in the state later this year, this fall. I think a lot of folks out there don't even know we have an elk population in Minnesota. We do. I wish it was bigger. I wish the DNR and the state would do things to allow it to get a little larger, but agricultural interests in the northwestern portion of Minnesota don't like elk. They're afraid they'll get into their crops, et cetera, et cetera. But it appears we've got 12 elk licenses available across three hunt zones for this fall. I believe almost all the hunting is in September. If you want to apply, you have until Tuesday, July 7th to apply for one of those 12 tags. The DNR's got a great elk management page. Just go to mndnr.gov and search elk management. You can learn all about the elk herds that we've got in northwestern Minnesota and how to apply if you're interested in taking a run at shooting an elk here in Minnesota. They're not quite as big as a moose, but they are very big, much bigger than a white-tailed deer. And occasionally they wander around other portions of the state. The DNR more and more is getting out press releases during the deer season, reminding folks that they might see an elk either from northwestern Minnesota or from western Wisconsin. There's a pretty viable elk herd over there in the Black River Falls area. You know, you got to tip the hat to Wisconsin a little bit there, folks. I've probably mentioned this before. Wisconsin decided to create an elk herd over there in the mid-1990s. It's been a long time. It's been more than 30 years since they started that herd, and it had some fits and starts. But it has gotten traction in the past decade, and it's growing quickly. They've got two elk herds now. One, they call it the Clam Lake herd, more in northern northwest Wisconsin. And now that other herd that is growing quickly down in the Black River Falls area, as the crow flies, that's what, 70 miles from the Minnesota border? It's quite close. And I would guess Wisconsin's got close to 750 wild elk over there now. And at the rate they're growing, they're going to hit 1,000 quickly. And there is some public hunting in Wisconsin, too. They haven't issued a lot of permits over there. It's actually a little ridiculous. We probably issue more permits here with a herd that's probably 25% the size of the one in Wisconsin because Wisconsin wants their herd to grow. Hey, here in Minnesota, we're more than happy to take cheap shots at Wisconsin now. And then I did last week on the turkey hunting thing. But give Wisconsin credit. They've got an elk herd. They look at it as a state asset, and they're letting that herd grow. Now, that's a good segue to what we're trying to get cooking here in northeastern Minnesota, where the Fond du Lac Band of Chippewa, as well as the DNR, are trying to get a new elk herd started in that area. Similar habitat to, you know, northwestern Wisconsin. And one thing that's tripping us up over here a little bit is back when Wisconsin launched their elk herd, there was no CWD. There were no CWD laws preventing Wisconsin from importing elk from other states. I think they got those elk from Colorado or somewhere else from the Rocky Mountains, and or there's some down in Kentucky. At least we didn't think there was CWD in Wisconsin, and that's a whole other story. But so there certainly were no interstate transport laws prohibiting folks from moving cervidae from state to state because of CWD when they launched that herd. Well, those laws exist now. So if the Fond du Lac Band and the DNR want to start a new elk herd in northeastern Minnesota, they can't go out west and just get elk and truck them here and release them, right? So the idea has been, let's get elk from our wild herds here in Minnesota, northwestern Minnesota, and move some of them to that cloquet area and establish a population there. Seems like a good idea. Well, unfortunately, we've kind of got crossways with the Red Lake Band, who has said, no, those elk fall within our treaty area. We don't want the Fond du Lac Band and the state moving them over. So because of that conflict, which has been around for several years, Outdoor News reported it on our front cover 3 years ago, but it's still festering to the point where right now this plan, which there were state dollars earmarked for it, is at best in limbo. And it's a real shame because I would like to see the elk population expand in our fine state. I think we've got the habitat. I think it would be a great recreational and public wildlife viewing opportunity that we could all enjoy. I would really like to see the bands, the Red Lake Band, the Fond du Lac Band, and the state figure this out, because this is a public good that I think everyone can get behind, would benefit everyone in the state of all races, creeds, and colors. Okay, well, there's a little Rob rant for you. Let's grab a break. When we return, we will talk with Corey Fisher from Trout Unlimited, talk about that roadless rule brouhaha that's bubbling up in the U.S. Congress out in Washington, D.C. Don't go away. More WCCO radio after these messages. WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Welcome back to the broadcast on this Sunday, June 21st. I'm Rob Jerisline. We're going to devote most of the segment to talking about the federal roadless rule, some of the issues cooking with that. Before I jump into that topic, real quick report from North Dakota on the status of their breeding duck populations, down overall this spring, down almost 10%. It looked like some of their puddle ducks, mallards, gadwall, even pintails were up a bit, and so that's good news. But the diver ducks, your canvasbacks, your redheads, your scaup, way down. And I hate to see that. I'm an old diver duck hunter from my Mississippi River days. And as North Dakota goes, so does the country. North Dakota is really the heart of the duck factory. So if they're down that much, I suspect the federal numbers are going to be down too this year, which is not going to be a surprise, as dry as it's been. However, despite those declines, I suspect the feds are still going to keep the duck season frameworks the same for next year. The feds and the state just don't seem interested in reducing the bag limit or the number of days as a conservation tool. And we'll talk more about that as we get deeper into the summer and the outlook for waterfowl hunting this fall. Now, there have been a ton of stories the past 10 days about some shenanigans in the U.S. Congress involving the roadless rule. We've also talked about the federal roadless rule as it pertains to some of the actions that the Trump administration might also be taking. The issue really exploded, however, last week with what we saw in a congressional committee. And now I've got a special guest from Trout Unlimited who's going to flesh the issue out with me a little bit more and listeners. His name is Corey Fisher. He's the public land policy director for Trout Unlimited. He's based out in Montana, but he spent a fair amount of time in the upper Midwest. Corey, thanks for joining me. And tell us about your time here in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Appreciate joining you here today. Again, Corey Fisher, I'm public land policy director for Trout Unlimited. I grew up in Michigan, and then went to college in northern Wisconsin, exploring the Shawamigan National Forest and those backcountry areas there that offer great trout fishing for brookies, rough grouse hunting. And then I also spent a few years working in northern Minnesota for the Forest Service on the Superior National Forest in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness.
Well, even though you're in Montana, I think you qualify as one of us, so you're going to be a respected source here today. Let's talk about the roadless rule. This thing goes back to 2001, correct? It stewed in the Clinton administration for a number of years, but it was one of the last things that was enacted before the Clinton administration exited at the start of this century. So it's a quarter century old.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it was put in place to try to resolve some of these longstanding conflicts over the management of these backcountry roadless areas. And you know, with a multi-billion dollar road maintenance backlog, that was some of the reasoning behind it. Kind of the rule of holes. When you find yourself over your head in a hole, put down the shovel. And in this case, putting down the shovel meant we're going to stop building roads we can't take care of into these backcountry roadless areas. So as you said, it's been in place for a quarter century. It's been really effective, I think, in balancing multiple uses within these landscapes. And really just does two things. One, it says no new road construction and no industrial scale logging, but everything else the roadless rule doesn't affect, and allows things like motorized use on existing trails, forest health projects to improve wildlife habitat and reduce, you know, wildfire hazards. So doing that thinning and prescribed burning, it's a really flexible tool for land managers.
And the Clinton administration didn't enact this on a whim. This was a multi-year project. They took, what, millions of public comments. I know Mike Dombeck fairly well. Mike was the U.S. Forest Service chief at the time. One of the most practical people you're ever going to meet, and he will talk about how deliberate they were about this and how he considers it a conservative rule, that the idea here was to try to save some money, not create new roads that we have to maintain. And Corey, it's worth pointing out, this does not affect all of the national forest acreage out there, right? This is just a fairly small component of what falls under U.S. National Forest Service purview.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the roadless rule affects roadless areas that are in, I believe it's 39 states throughout the country. So really everywhere from, you know, Alaska down to Florida even. But as you said, it's not the totality of the national forest system. You know, in Minnesota, it's about 60,000 acres. So 2% of the Forest Service lands in Minnesota are roadless. You know, Wisconsin, it's similar. It's about 69,000 acres or 6% of the Forest Service lands in the state. So we're not talking about the, you know, the totality of the national forest system. We're really talking about a smaller portion that are some of our last best fish and wildlife habitat and hunting and angling areas.
Yeah, it's about 59 million acres, I think, nationally. There might be folks listening who are thinking, well, it sounds like the bulk of those are out west. What would you say to folks who would say, well, this is a Western issue. This is an Alaskan issue. Bring it back home for my listeners a little bit.
Yeah, definitely where I live, we're talking at, you know, there's millions of acres here in Montana of roadless areas. But I would say like up in the upper Midwest that those roadless areas, while may not be millions of acres, it's really an outsized value for hunters and anglers. Looking at Minnesota, Trout Unlimited did some research looking at like, okay, what are the values of these areas for trout fisheries? And in Minnesota, of those 60,000 acres, about 38% of them are headwaters of designated trout streams. You know, looking at Wisconsin, you know, 10 out of, there's 16 inventoried roadless areas in Wisconsin, and 10 of those are headwaters of classified trout streams. So these are the areas that provide that healthy habitat, cold, clean water that those trout fisheries need.
You're listening to WCCO Outdoors. We are chatting with Corey Fisher. He's the Public Land Policy Director from Trout Unlimited. He and his organization are opposed to efforts in the U.S. Congress and within the Trump administration to try to repeal the 25-year-old roadless rule. Corey, there might be folks out there listening who are saying, you know, gosh, build some more roads. That's more access for me. It's going to be easier for me to get back in there where I want to go. How would you respond to someone like that? Why isn't it important not to build more roads?
You know, a couple of reasons. One is we have about 370,000 miles of roads already on the national forest system. So extensive, you know, more roads than the, you know, the interstate system in the United States. Within that, there's a multi-billion dollar road maintenance backlog. And that means that on those roads, there's problems with erosion and sediment running off into trout streams, you know, creating problems for trout to spawn. It creates travel challenges. You know, if we can't maintain these roads, it's hard to access, even though the roads are there, it's hard to access public lands because they are so poorly maintained. And then we have problems with, you know, habitat fragmentation, both for big game, deer, elk, and also for trout. You put these roads into intact habitat and you really reduce the effectiveness of that habitat for the animals we'd like to go out and hunt and fish for. So it's really a multiple reasons why increasing road density on our national forests really does equate to a reduction in the quality of fish and wildlife habitat, and that leads to a reduction in the quality of hunting and fishing.
Now, advocates for repealing the roadless rule keep throwing the fire thing in front of everybody, that we need more roads so that we can contain fires, especially out west. And anyone who watches the news, Corey, we see a lot of fires out west, in northern Minnesota, places like that. How do you respond to that concern?
Yeah, the fires are a big issue, you know, throughout the west right now. You know, we're dealing with a massive drought and record low snowpacks. We're anticipating a very smoky year and big fires. So we definitely feel those impacts. But what I would say is that the roadless rule is a flexible tool that allows the agency to do those hazardous fuel reduction projects, like thinning out overstock trees that are needed to reduce the risk of wildfire. In fact, there's been millions of acres of those hazardous fuel reduction projects that have already occurred within the exceptions that are written into the roadless rule. So it's I really feel like the fire issue is a red herring, especially when you look at states throughout the West where this work has been done. For instance, in Wyoming, of all the hazardous fuel projects that have been conducted on Forest Service lands in the state, 32% of those were in roadless areas. 33% of national forest lands are roadless areas in the state of Wyoming. So you have an even balance of where that fire work is being done, balanced with the habitat protections.
Let's talk about where this is public policy-wise in Washington, D.C. The Trump administration last year announced it wanted to repeal the roadless rule. It did a public comment period, and I don't know if I've seen the official numbers, but the vibe seems to be they were absolutely overwhelmed by opposition to repealing the rule. And we haven't heard anything from the Trump administration about that executive effort going on right now. I don't know. Is that imminent? Are we going to hear? Where does that stand?
Yeah, so you're right. It was a very, I would say, truncated comment period. But even with that short window of time that was provided, it was hundreds of thousands of comments that the agency received. And over 90% of those were in favor of maintaining protections for roadless areas. So by and large, the public has voiced support for keeping the roadless rule as it is and the management of those lands as it is. I anticipate that later on this summer is when we're going to see the agency come out with a draft rule and the environmental impact statement that they produced along with that. And that's going to open up another public comment period. So that's something that I think, you know, listeners should be on the lookout for is later on this summer, probably into July, maybe August, when we're going to see another comment period and an opportunity to weigh in.
And then on the Congress side, we've got a bipartisan wildfire containment bill. Everybody agrees with that. And then last week, our friend Senator Mike Lee from Utah, if you listen to the show, his name comes up a lot because he's usually doing anti-public lands things, offered an amendment to flat out repeal this roadless rule. It passed, 11-9 in that committee. What's the next step? Do we expect to see that on the entire Senate floor soon?
Potentially. You know, that would be the next step because it was reported out of committee. You know, I would just say we do need to be doing more forest management, forest and watershed restoration on our national forests. And we, like you said, that wildfire bill that the amendment was attached to that had bipartisan support. And I think we need more bipartisan space, you know, on these forestry issues. And it was really unfortunate to see the roadless repeal attached to it and take away that bipartisan effort. Yeah, it was unfortunate to see that attached to it. And it's hard to say where that's going to go or when it might go there, but that would be the next step would be it to be on the Senate floor. So it's important, I think, for senators really around the country to be hearing from their constituents that we don't want to see this move forward with the roadless repeal attached.
I appreciate the leadership role that Trout Unlimited has taken on this issue. You can learn a lot more to your heart's content and then some at tu.org. Scroll down and you'll see campaigns. You can read an article about standing up for the roadless rule. And then you've got another great website, standup.tu.org. That's front and center on that site. Also, a quick way to advocate for not repealing this roadless rule. All those details are there, standup.tu.org. Corey, thanks a lot for joining me. Good luck. Keep up the good fight.
Yeah, we appreciate it, Rob. Likewise, and nice to be able to get back to my Midwestern roots a little bit and talk about places that I've long held in my heart.
It's fun to catch up. Have a good week ahead and good luck with your work.
I appreciate it. Take care.
Corey Fisher, Public Land Policy Director for Trout Unlimited, talking about the roadless rule. Learn more at standup.tu.org. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages. WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Welcome back to the broadcast on this Sunday, June 21st. We're going to talk with someone from the Minnesota DNR here in just a moment about some new special regs that the agency is pitching on about a dozen lakes around the state. Before I get to that, one other quick fishing topic that I didn't mention last week. Our old buddy Ron Shera had a column in Outdoor News a couple weeks ago where he kind of threw a hand grenade out there, and whoa, Nelly, did we get a response to it? Ron's suggesting that If we built a bunch of wooden planks into state wildlife management areas, no one would tolerate that. But we somehow tolerate it with docks extending out into public water. And he said all these docks are basically squatting on our public waters, preventing access to anglers to get into those areas. And they should be charged a tax for the size of their docks out there. As I suspected when we printed the piece in Outdoor News, we posted it online too, and the Facebook post had hundreds of comments, hundreds of people who did not like the idea. I had a letter to the editor this past week that I had to edit out the expletives. As I suspected, a lot of folks feel like their lakeshore taxes are what pay for that little added access to that public waterway, and they did not like Mr. Sheriff suggesting that they pay even more taxes to have a big dock out there. Some might argue those docks also provide some pretty good fish habitat. A lot of folks like to fish around them. A lot of dock owners don't like that, of course. Nonetheless, I appreciate Ron being a little cantankerous and asking some hard questions about public assets, especially as they affect fishing. I won't go any further with that topic. We've got more fishing to talk about right now. Let's talk about something cooking with DNR fisheries right now. Periodically, the agency likes to alter some of its special regulations out there, and they just pitched about a dozen more, I believe, around the state. There's a public comment period on it. The DNR is looking for input, and I thought we'd go right to the DNR itself and ask some questions about this process. We've got John Dunn with us. He is the Fisheries Rules and Regulations Coordinator. He's with us now. John, it sounds like you've been at the agency about a year. Good to have you on the show.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk a big picture, 20,000 feet. Like I say, periodically, the DNR is altering special fishing regulations around the state. I don't know. Can you speak to that? How many lakes do we have in the state that have special fishing regs, and why are they necessary?
Yeah, so we do have a good number of lakes and even stretches of rivers or streams that have special or experimental regulations on them. Probably in the hundreds at this point, don't have an exact number. But this is a way that we can manage individual bodies of water separate from the statewide limits. So there's a whole variety of reasons that these could be implemented, whether it's we identify an opportunity maybe to increase size structure or fishing opportunities, or, you know, at times if there is an issue that's found through surveys or feedback from anglers, we may be able to implement something a little bit different on these bodies of water.
Do you get much public feedback on the overall concept of special regs? I know I've spoken to some people who maybe are new to fishing or not as entrenched in understanding fisheries and wildlife management as I have been. They grouse to me a little bit like, man, why can't it just be one fishing reg? Well, why do we have to have all these different regs? A, do you hear much of that grousing? And B, what's your retort to that?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I hear that. I'm not originally from this state, so it was a little bit new to me when I first moved here to see some of the special and experimental regulations. And when you look at how much water we have in Minnesota and just the diversity of the landscapes and the ecosystems, that's really the reason why we have these. And we have such a robust agency here to manage these, all of the natural resources, that this allows us to best implement different practices, like I said, to meet different management goals for these specific bodies of water.
Now, John, you and I were talking a little bit before we got started. You're from down south originally, and tell me if I'm wrong. It would seem like in general, maybe in southern waters, you don't need to have quite as much diversity in your regulations because you got a longer growing season. You've got fish have it pretty good down there, right? They can grow big. They got a lot of food, fertile waters. Whereas up here, you got to put a little more nuance and we've got a ton of freshwater fishing pressure, right? Right. And there's parts of the South that get pounded too, but we have a lot of anglers and that added pressure kind of requires, like I say, water specific regulations.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, definitely where I'm originally from, a lot less regulations and stuff like that. But also there's so much less water down there. Mm-hmm. As far as natural lakes, I mean, there's really none in where I'm from. You have rivers and you have impoundments and stuff like that. But again, just the diversity and the opportunities that we have here in the state of Minnesota really is incredible. And this process of implementing special and experimental regulations helps us to manage that in the most effective way possible.
You having a good time fishing up here, John?
Absolutely. I can't complain.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. All right. Well, let's talk specifically about what the DNR's got cooking now. Like, say, about 12 lakes. Looks like some really strong emphasis on sunfish regulations. What's that all about?
Yeah, I'll say it's not that we're necessarily focusing on sunfish at the exclusion of any other species. But I will say sunfish are a very important group of fish here in Minnesota. You know, whether you're a new angler just getting into fishing or you're an experienced angler, especially you look at some of the ice anglers that have all the gear and technology still going after sunfish. They're just a really important and popular game fish to target. And, you know, we have some an exciting new regulation that's being proposed this year for sunfish, and it's something that gets a lot of attention from the public.
Tell us, what is that specific regulation? What's new about it, and where potentially will it be applied?
Yeah, so we have, I believe it's 6 lakes being proposed right now that have what I refer to as the 20 and 5 regulation. So it's the same total amount. So 20 combined total sunfish would be your daily in possession limit. But the difference is you can only have 5 that are over 8 inches. And that's really the new part of the regulation. You know, we haven't had length limits for sunfish prior to this. And so it's an exciting new regulation based on, you know, a lot of research and input from different area supervisors.
So only 5 can be 8 inches or more. What's the idea there to leave some of these bigger bluegills out there so that they're the brood stock and they pass on their bigger genetics? Can you speak to the biology a little bit, John?
Yeah.
How does that work? I know you're not a fisheries biologist, but can you give listeners a little bit of what's cooking here?
Absolutely. Yeah. So for more details, you know, we definitely have subject matter experts that can speak a little bit more to this. But the way I like to think of it is when you have larger sunfish in a population, they prevent those smaller sunfish from being able to reproduce. So those smaller sunfish then are forced to devote all of their energy and resources to growing bigger in order for that opportunity to reproduce. Whereas when you remove all of those larger sunfish from the population, it allows the smaller sunfish to start reproducing. And so then at that point, those smaller sunfish have no reason to grow larger, and they're devoting their energy and resources towards reproduction as opposed to growing bigger. So that's a very simplified version, but that's kind of how I like to think of it.
Well, I suspect a lot of folks out there listening are nodding their heads, because we've all gone fishing on lakes where we see just oodles and oodles of tiny little sunfish. And if there's a way to try to increase the size structure of those fish, I think most folks would be on board with that. So I like anytime the DNR tries some new regulations like this to see if they work, and maybe then can ultimately expand them onto other lakes. This is WCCO Outdoors. We are chatting with John Dunn. He is the Fisheries Rules and Regulations Coordinator for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. The agency just this past week issued a press release explaining that it's pitching some special regulations on about a dozen lakes across the state. I think 9 of them are sunfish. There's also a walleye rule, maybe a pike rule in there too. Let's talk about the public input part of this, John. How can folks chime in? Yay or nay, however they feel about it, how can they get involved?
Yeah, so we just opened up the public comment phase for this process. So that was at the beginning of June. We published our online questionnaire. You can find it on the DNR website. We also posted signs at all of the access points for the lakes that are affected by these proposals. If you go to any of those access points, you can see a short synopsis of what's being proposed on the yellow signs. There's also a QR code that you can scan on your phone. It'll take you straight to that survey. The survey also includes a little bit of background, just as why are we proposing this? What's the general goal, what we're trying to do? And then it has just a few questions you can answer about, you know, do you support this? Is there any comment that you want to provide? You can choose which ones to answer. You don't have to respond to all of them if you don't want to, or you can on that survey. And then that survey will stay open through the end of September. Early to mid-September is also when we'll have a few public input meetings where the public can show up either in person or virtually and, again, provide feedback.
Again, folks, you can find that online questionnaire. Go to mndnr.gov, click news, and just check out the June 15th press release on this. Minnesota DNR seeks input on proposed special fishing regulations. There's a link there to that online questionnaire. That's one of the quickest ways probably to get to it. Again, per John's point, you need to fill that out by September 30th, so you got some time. And then it sounds like in late August, we're going to find out the times of these public meetings. We will have that on WCCO Outdoors as well as in Outdoor News if folks want to participate in one of those meetings directly. Before we let you go, John, I had one of your colleagues on, Sarah Middleton. I had her on. We talked about how you folks were kind of reviewing the regulations booklet, maybe tuning that up, seeking public comment on that. It's my understanding the public input portion of that is over, but can you give listeners a quick 30-second synopsis of where that process is at?
Yeah, so we just wrapped that up recently. I believe we had about 800 or so responses, which was great to get that much feedback. And we've been looking through the comments and trying to see, you know, what we can do in the short term and also down the road. The regulations books, they really are an effort in continuous improvement. So we're always trying to make sure we're communicating all of the information as effectively as possible. There's nothing planned immediately for this, but we are continuing to evaluate the information we've gotten so far. And we're going to, you know, plan to build on this in the future and just making sure we're meeting the public's need and providing that information.
We'll look forward to seeing the final product of that. We got the hunting regulations coming out not too far in the future. I usually expect to see those around Game Fair in early August. Well, John, thanks for joining us one more time. Circling back, we're talking about the DNR looking for input on special fishing regulations. Go to mndnr.gov, click the June 15th press release, and you can hop onto the online questionnaire right there if you decide you want to chime in. John, thanks for joining me, and have a good week ahead, a good summer.
Thanks, you too.
That was John Dunn, Fisheries Rules and Regulations Coordinator for the Minnesota DNR. Let's break. More of the broadcast after these messages. WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Welcome back to the broadcast final segment of this week's program on this Sunday, June 21st. I'm Rob Gerisline. One more time, everybody, happy Father's Day to my fellow dads out there. Today is also the summer solstice, right? Longest day of the year. Days are going to start getting a little shorter tomorrow, believe it or not, just a smidge. Most people won't even notice the days getting shorter for probably the better part of a month. But we will definitely start noticing a little less daylight, right, when we get into late July and early August. That's when I start to notice it. I once backpacked up in Alaska about a week before the summer solstice, and I will never forget it. I will never forget returning home and being so happy to embrace the absence of light, you know, at 9 or 10 o'clock after being up in the land of the midnight sun, catching myself reading a paperback novel in a tent, probably at about 1 a.m., just using ambient light. It definitely can be challenging if you've never experienced before, especially if you're sleeping in a tent, right, where it's you can't escape the light. You know, folks who live up there, they get inside, they've got very dark curtains they use to pull over their windows so that they can still get some sleep. It was a good learning experience for me, something I've warned other folks about if they ever go to Alaska, which is a wonderful, beautiful place. Don't get me wrong. I love Alaska. I've been there several times. But if you ever go during either solstice, winter or summer, be prepared. It's definitely different. It will affect your body more than you realize. A quick sad note I want to share with listeners. Condolences to the friends and family and co-workers of Lori Nauman. She had been with the Minnesota DNR's non-game program for, I believe, 35, 36 years. She passed away in May at the age of 60. Lori was on this broadcast a couple years ago. She joined me on this program. We talked about the Eagle Cam. She was a big, fierce proponent and advocate for the DNR's Eagle Cam, which has been, of course, immensely popular around the world. Also, the DNR Falcon Cam. Coworkers remember Lori for her contributions to conservation and her work within the agency. Definitely leaves some big shoes to fill there at the Minnesota DNR. Dedicated listeners to this show know Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, longtime regular guest on this program. Sharon and Lori were close friends. I spoke with Sharon about Lori, remembered her a little bit earlier this week. A celebration of Lori's life will be this coming Saturday, June 27th, at Gustavus Adolphus Lutheran Church in St. Paul. If you would like some more details on that celebration of life, AndersonFuneralHome.com has the details. I did not know Lori real well. Like I say, she was a guest on this program. I talked to her a time or two on the phone, and I know she was just a fierce advocate for non-game species here in Minnesota and did a fine job there at the DNR. I know her obituary says memorials are preferred to the Minnesota Non-Game Wildlife Program. So that's a bit of a solemn way to wrap up this week's show, but I wanted to take a moment to remember Lori. Next week, a couple good guests are going to join me, Ron Husfett. He jumps into the broadcast once a year. We usually talk about the Boundary Waters and look ahead to Game Fair, which is not too far away. What, less than 2 months, month and a half away. Also, a young woman who is becoming a leader on the state outdoor scene, Colleen Fehrenbacher. She's from southeastern Minnesota down in the Lanesboro area. She's the executive director of the Eagle Bluff Environmental Learning Center down there, and she's a very active outdoors woman. I'm looking forward to getting to know her a little bit. Also, an upcoming interview, Ryan Rothstein, a deer columnist at Outdoor News, wrote a great column about his battle with woody invasive plants on his property, something that I have dealt with on my dad's place in southeastern Minnesota. I want to talk to him about that and what it might mean for the future of our oak hickory forests out there that deer, turkey, and other wildlife depend upon. So some great guests coming up on this program as we get into the heart of summer 2026. With that, everybody, have a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Gerisline signing off for WCCO Outdoors.